Good morning. How are you doing today, David?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
Well, I think I'm living history. And what I mean by that is that I was there when Spielberg was brand new. I've been there for so many brand new people that have gone on to greatness. And I think that you're that guy. I really, really do, because you have created a movie here that is going to get everybody involved.
Oh, dude. Thank you, bro. I love that. I really appreciate it, man. That's one of my favorite filmmakers of all time. So if I can just get a sliver of that guy's talent, I feel good.
Well, the way that you bring your characters to life in This Is the Year, it amazes me because, I mean, there's so many things going on, but yet it's one story. And that's what I love about what you've done here.
Thank you, man. We really wanted to create an ensemble feel-good movie that anyone could sit down and watch it and get something from it. Even an older generation, parents of their tweens and teens could sit down and be like, this reminds me of an 80s or a 90s movie. I definitely am not shy with my nostalgic throwbacks in the film because, John Hughes, that generation of
That's it.
coming-of-age films really made such a huge impact on me. So I was definitely trying to recreate that, but for a whole younger generation. So hopefully the middle school and the high school audience will really see this and just feel good. I remember the first time I showed the film to Selena Gomez. She watched it and she got a tear in her eye and a smile on her face in the end. And she's like, they just don't make movies like this anymore. We need to feel good right now. The world's crazy. We need to feel good. And this is it. So I was so honored to have her jump on board to get on the producing team and really spread the word and put the message out there.
Speaking of that producing team, being the director and the co-star, I mean, did you have to look at yourself in the mirror sometimes and have that conversation like you would another star?
Yeah, no, it was, I would run back and watch playback and then fix myself and run back in. And I had a good buddy on set who I trusted, who could give me good direction. We didn't have the time for me to, I could easily fall into a rabbit hole with trying to correct myself. So I just had to trust my friend that it was going well.
Every generation has a band in real life that they have to travel many miles to go see. And Lovely the Band is the band that you chose in this movie. Do you have a band that you would travel miles to see?
Lovely the Band was one of those bands for me.
Really?
They are newer, but they are multi-platinum, and they've been around a while, especially Mitchie, the lead singer. But I had been just loving on their first album, and there was a song there called "Maybe I'm Afraid" that I felt was so right for the end of the film. And thankfully, I had no the guitarist of Lovely the Band, his dad was the creator of Wizards of Waverly Place. Like, what are the odds?
Wow.
And we got in touch, everyone linked up, and they felt the song was perfect for the end. I felt the song was perfect for the end. And it just kind of was a serendipitous way everything came together, and it just that song works perfect for the end of the film. And yeah, it was
Well,
worked out well.
you're going to help this band get lifted into, because I mean, radio does radio things and not everybody's doing it because they're streaming as well. But when you have a movie like this and you introduce Lovely the Band to a lot of new listeners, my God, dude. I mean, they're going to be filling up their arenas very quickly.
I hope so. They're awesome. They deserve it because their music's really, really great.
Now, being the director and we're all living in this television binge watching world nowadays, why did you select a movie over a series that you could have had, several seasons over?
I felt like it was the best way to kind of get the message out would be done in 90 minutes. The way we always thought of the film with the characters was always in a more bookended structure. So I think we just always kind of pictured it like that, and that was the best way to present this story. And it just felt like something that felt better in feature format. If I felt it would have been better in series, I would have done that, but I felt like it was just too bookended for series.
Now, did you create a merchandise department? Because this movie, people are going to want some stuff. They want to wear the t-shirts. They're going to want things from this movie to have in their own personal life.
That's a great, maybe you and I team up with it, okay? Because that jacket Josh wears, the yellow and blue one, I think we could sell that.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing about it. I mean, it's almost like this movie. I went to a rock concert. I had this experience. Now I want something from it so I can have it with me every day.
I love it. Dude, you're awesome.
Now, there are many messages in this film, and that's part of the marrying thing that I love the way that you did that, like we're taking several different paths and stuff like that. You know, how would you best describe it to a friend? Is it a movie about friendship? It's a movie about stumbling. It's a movie about realizing life. I mean, there's so much going on here, but at the same time, it's like we're looking at our own personal, you know, paths on the planet.
Absolutely, man. It's a lot of those things you just said, but I think at the heart, it's about this kid, Josh, mm-hmm. who expects love and expects life to be one thing because he's been so inundated with social media, with movies. He idolizes 80s films. So he expects love to be one thing. And then in reality, it might be something else. And he tackles those themes. And along the way, I think I really just wanted to explore the notion that expectation and reality aren't always the same thing. And reality can be very beautiful. So I wanted him to wrestle with that theme, expectation and reality. And I feel like, you know, this generation of young people, especially tweens and teens, and it's a universal message, really struggles with that. This generation in particular, or just this time we're all at, you know, we're all so overwhelmed with content that I think we expect our lives to go in one way. In reality, it's not always that case. In reality itself is quite beautiful.
Well, I love the way that you've designed this for young adults, because YA readers are out there in strength and stuff like that. And will you do anything like that? Will you go to one of these powerhouse YA books and say, you know what, I'm going to make a movie out of this book?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We got a few things coming up. Stay tuned to my social media accounts, because we're going to be making some announcements soon here. And have more going on. In fact, I have a Netflix show that was just recently announced called A Tale Dark and Grim, based on a best-selling book. And that comes out the 8th of October. And that's a really good show for families. They can all sit down and watch. It's an animated show with Adam Lambert playing the devil, and Rainey Rodriguez, Andre Robinson. It's got a really, really great cast that we're very excited about.
What is that like for you to be at the helm of something like that? Because I mean, your imagination has got to be on 24/7.
Yeah. It's you know, it's a lot of pressure, but at the end of the day, you want to honor the source material. So, you know, with this case, with this Netflix show, we wanted to really stay in touch with Adam Gidwitz, the author, and make sure that he feels we've respected the soul of his story. And he was very happy all along the way, and we definitely kept him very close in the process. So to me, it's really about kind of just honoring that source material, whatever it is, wherever it came from, and making sure that the best version of that is being delivered. So to really not make it about yourself and make it about the story.
Bringing the character of Zoe to life, you know, there's going to be a lot of girls that are going to see themselves, or they're going to wish they were Zoe. I mean, you guys crafted a character here that's pretty spot on.
Thank you, man. That I tip of the hat to our my female co-writer, Sienna Aquilini, who really wanted to give that character a great arc. Her and I both felt like a lot of 80s movies didn't really give the pretty girl or the quote unquote hot girl an arc.
That's right.
She was more just used and abused in a lot of films. And we wanted to really give her a complex arc and show that, you know, you can't judge a book by its cover. And there's a lot going on in all people, and especially in that girl. So we really wanted to start her one place and end her in a completely different place and give her a complex arc.
There's several times during the film that you use facial expressions as being the art form. I mean, was that something that you did on purpose in the way of going, we don't need words here, I just need facial expressions. I need the warmth, or I need the fear that you can give me.
100%. Yeah. With my director of photography, Nathaniel Voris, we both wanted to give a warmth a lot of the film. We wanted the film to be warm in general. So we had a lot of twinkly lights. We had a lot of warm lighting and a lot of camera moves that kind of emphasize the emotion of the story. We knew from day one that this story isn't reinventing the wheel. I mean, any love triangle, you know, they make lots of them a year. It's not about guessing who does he end up with. It's more about how does he get there.
Yep.
And we wanted to really pump the emotion along the way and make it as exciting as possible. So we did things like adding a lot of very warm lighting, a lot of twinkly lights in the background to give a magical feel, and use the camera to kind of emphasize small moments to make them seem bigger, because in the eyes of the character, they were.
Wow. David, congratulations to you and your team on this movie. People are going to be talking about it. It's going to be all over social media. And I mean, you've done something here that's absolutely spectacular.
Oh, dude, I really appreciate it, man. Thank you so much. I'm stoked, and I can't wait for others to check it out like you. So thank you, man.
Well, come back to the show anytime. The door is always going to be open for you, Mr. David.
Awesome, man. I'll come back for sure.
All right,
man.
Arrow.
Yes, sir.
Arrow. I just realized you have more time today if you want to take it. You can take another 8 minutes or so.
Well, David, how you doing? Long time no talk to.
We're back. We're back on the show.
Making that transition from television into movies and things like that, as that creative mind, what was that like for you? And how do you do you plan on doing both sides still?
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. You know, growing up a child actor on shows like Wizards of Waverly Place and That's the Raven and many, many others, I always ask questions on the TV and film side. I always ask questions to writers and directors. How do they get that joke? Why do you put the camera here? I just wanted to understand the logic of things. So my education really was growing up on set, asking questions, is just being there, being in the thick of it. So my education was purely a practical one and seeing what the actual business is like on a day-to-day basis. So when I got older, I started writing for Wizards of Waverly Place. I was the youngest writer in Disney Channel history. And then from there, I started writing films and spec scripts and just doing what I could to be as creative as possible, because I've always known that story can be one of the most powerful means of shaping culture and making an impact and elevating. So, you know, as of late, we got this movie coming out. This is the year. And then thankfully, we have a TV show on Netflix coming out called A Tale Dark and Grim. So we're definitely doing both at my company, Novo Media Group. N-O-V-O means new in Latin. We definitely want to do both TV and film. And we have a lot of exciting things coming up to that end that we'll be announcing here soon. But we're definitely wanting to stay active in both TV and film. But the kind of unifying thing about our company is we really want to entertain, educate, and elevate with all of our stories. We want them to be impactful. So we're working it.
Well, I'm glad you're talking about writing, because I think that we've entered this generation now that there's going to be a lot of writing, but people don't know how to get their writing forward. I call them hider writers. They write, but then they put it in a box and they stuff it in the attic. And it's
That's funny.
The goal is to try to get those words out there. How do you push yourself through that brick wall to make sure that your words and your stories are seen as well as heard?
That's a great point. I mean, you know, I think first of all, you have to try to find themes that are stories that are relevant for nowadays. We live in a really unique and interesting time. So making sure that your stories are relevant, making sure it's a story that people want to see and hear. And then just trying to be artistically excellent, trying to be the best you possibly can and trying to package it up with the best people possible. It is a tough time in a very competitive atmosphere. So anything you can do to give yourself the edge up usually comes in the form of like attaching really key elements that people really want to work with, directors, writers, producers, whatever it may be. So, you know, I'm very fortunate to have some great relationships out there, and I'll call on them and partner with them to really give us the leg up to get out there and be seen and heard.
You coming from that Disney family, you know, everybody at Disney sings. Are you going to work on some music?
I can't sing to save my life. You got the talent or you don't. And I'm not ashamed to say it. I just don't got it. I can strum a guitar, but I definitely can't sing.
One of the things that readers of books, as well as people who watch movies and television shows, don't understand is the power and the willingness a writer has got to be to themselves in order to let the story move through them. Your writing instrument, is it the computer screen, or do you physically have a pen, a writing instrument that you jot things down first and then you build upon it?
I always start with pen and paper, yep. So I'll just like, it's just usually a bunch of random notes, like this would be a good idea, or I really like this theme, or like this philosophy, or this is a powerful moment in a movie. So I always have like a notes folder of many different thoughts and many things. And then somehow a few of those will find its way together into an idea. And we'll kind of go from there. But I'm super open. It doesn't have to always stem, you know, from me. We have at my company, Novo, we have a great team. And so a lot of the ideas come from some other members of our team. And then I'll put my head together with that person and we'll whiteboard it and we'll break out the index cards and start to beat out a story. And then we go from there to see if it takes shape, see if it sticks with you. Usually if it's a if it's a great story, it won't leave you alone. It continually follows you, and it has to be told.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how we work.
At Novo, are you guys jumping into podcasting? And the reason why I bring that up is because I know a lot of actors now are starting to do their own podcast. It's not about getting on there and just, you know, yucking it up, but they actually have full stories with sound effects. It's almost like watching a movie, but it's inside your head.
It's a great idea. We've talked about it. It's never taken shape, but dude, it's a great idea. I would love to do something like that.
It also takes you to the acting imagination to a different level, wouldn't it? Because I mean, if you've been on stage and if you've been in, you know, TVs and movies, I mean, to go onto a podcast and use theater of the mind, I mean, that's a good exercise.
Oh, it's awesome. And it's a great way to prove a story too, to make sure that it's working, to make sure that people like it. It's an incredible way to test out a piece of material.
Mm-hmm. Now, as a writer, do you mourn the loss of the characters? In other words, even with This Is the Year, I mean, when everything wrapped up, did you go through a mourning period? Because now the next step is to relinquish it to the world. But you, as the creative mind behind it, it's like, oh, there goes my baby.
No man, it was I remember making any independent film, as I'm sure you're very aware, is a bit of a miracle, because there's so many things have to fall in place so quickly. You have all these people running around, and you can never miss a day, you can never miss a scene, you got to get it all in, and you have no extra time. Time is the enemy. So we were so hyper focused and so scrambling to get it done and move it. I remember when it finished, it was almost like, wait, what? We're done? It's like you're in the thick of battle. You're in the thick of battle, and you don't realize that the war is over. And I remember we finished, and then the next day I was on a flight going home, and I was a bit shell shocked. And I missed everyone, because it was like, you know, you're leaving your companions that you've been in the trenches with, and suddenly you're back home. It was in civilian life, if you will, for lack of better words. It was pretty interesting feeling, because it's just such an intense environment. Making a film, obviously I use military comparisons, but obviously we're nowhere near similar to the military, and obviously want to thank all of our troops for their service, but it's just abused by comparison.
Well, I've talked with so many actors that love doing the independent films, because it's almost like being live on stage. You only get, you know, if you get one or two takes, that's perfect, because you've got to use your personal skills in order to keep that thing going, because time is money.
100%, and you don't have any time on an independent film. You're exactly right. Like, you, that's why I so enjoyed working with the lead of the film is actually my brother, who's also a child actor and has grown up in the industry and has been in the business forever. I know him so well that I could direct him in a way that got the performance that I needed in one or two takes. So he saved me a ton of time, because I just have to give him a look. You know, I'd walk up after he did a scene. I just gave the way I walked up, he knew what the note was. So that shorthand saved us a ton of time. And then the rest of the cast, I casted all experienced actors, people that I had either known for years or people that I knew had been in the business for a long time, because we didn't really have the time for 5-6 takes.
Yep.
You know, everyone got it, and they got it quickly. I was very fortunate in that sense.
Wow. Well, once again, congratulations on This Is the Year. Is there a website that listeners can go to give you guys some love?
Yeah, absolutely. So the movie comes out September 24th. Everywhere movies are sold, iTunes, Amazon, Vudu, Redbox, you name it. Please go check it out on the 24th. And then on my, you know, social media accounts, I'd love to hear what you think. I'm very excited for your thoughts on the film.
I love it, man. Once again, please come back to the show anytime in the future. The door is always going to be open for you, man.
Oh, dude, appreciate it, brother. Thank you, man. I'll take you up on that.
You bet. You be brilliant today, okay, sir?
Thank you, man. And you as well, man.